Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar. We live during a time of an abundance of food, thanks in part to advances in farming from the Green Revolution, efficiencies gained from industrialization and globalization. But in the midst of feast, there's also widespread malnutrition and obesity, often in the same places. I spoke with John Rennie, editor-in-chief of Scientific American magazine, which in September of 2007 explored the issues of food and health. Rennie talked about what he calls a paradox of feast and famine. Here's John Rennie. John, welcome to Earth and Sky.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
The Scientific American has dedicated an issue to the issues of feast and famine. What is most important here? What is something that you really want to communicate to the public?
With this issue of Scientific American, we thought it would be great to look at a lot of issues having to do with food and health. That's something that a lot of us think about all the time at a very personal level, but it's also something that has real global repercussions as well. And one of the things that struck us as we looked at what was in the literature and the state of the world about these things is that there's a lot of confusion about nutrition and health, and there are also these sort of remarkable paradoxes. The paradox is that a lot of us, you know, maybe are used to thinking about large portions of the world as being starving, and the rich portions of the world as maybe being the ones that are overweight, overfed. The odd thing is that these days, in fact, there is probably as much obesity and overweight in a lot of the developing world as there is in the industrialized world. At the same time, we do still have 800 million people in the world who are slowly starving and because they're not getting enough to eat. So in a sense, we've got a global paradox of, as we used with the title of the issue, sort of feast and famine, that we have both too much of the wrong kind of foods because there has been this explosion of high-calorie sorts of food that is available to people everywhere in the world, and yet we also haven't eliminated the problem of malnutrition and starvation around the world.
Now, talk a little bit more about this paradox. At this point in time, the 21st century, we're at a point where we have just about as many people who are overweight as who suffer from chronic hunger.
In fact, the sort of amazing thing, I think it's a surprising statistic to a lot of people, is that these days there are actually about 1.3 billion people who are overweight and only about 800 million who are underweight. So in fact, we actually have more overweight people than sickly underweight people. Science comes into this at a lot of different levels, although ultimately when you're dealing with a lot of these issues, it's not just one that you look for some sort of scientific or technological fix for. You can look at the science with respect to the nutrition of what kinds of things should people be eating in order to try to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Or you can also look at the converse of that, of what is it that people are eating too much of that is tending to make people less well off. So, for example, the amazing thing is that, again, one of the reasons why so many people, particularly in developing parts of the world, are now overweight is because we have seen this spread of Western lifestyle to a lot of these countries, and a lot more of them have access to some kinds of, you know, what we would tend to think of as sort of junk foods a lot of the time, and particularly lots of sugary beverages. Because of all that, diabetes, which is a very serious health condition and which traditionally, people always thought of diabetes as a problem of the rich part of the world. It was a disease of affluence. But these days, it's one of the fastest rising health problems in the developing world. It's really astonishing the rates at which you're seeing diabetic people coming to be in a lot of these countries. For example, in Mexico, 15 years ago, diabetes was almost non-existent. And yet, at this point, almost a one-seventh of the Mexican population has diabetes. Similar sort of things are shaping up in India. So partly science comes into this at a question of what can we do to try to address these problems, prevent these kinds of health problems. There's also a scientific issue when it comes in when you try to think of, well, how does this inform the ways of trying to raise enough food for the people who are starving? That itself is still an issue. Again, it's a sort of grim irony of these things that we certainly are making more than enough food in the world to be able to feed everyone, but there are a lot of political and economic reasons why it's not getting to everybody. So, you know, we can certainly try to develop a lot of political and economic fixes to try to help them. And in fact, frankly, the best way to try to help a lot of these people who are starving is to try to do things that will help them be less poor. But frankly, you know, politics and economics can sometimes be hard to budge. And so we may also need technological fixes to try to raise agricultural productivity. And so that's one of the other things we look at in the issue is we talk about, is there a role in all of this for things like genetically modified crops or new kinds of improvements that could be made to different sorts of pesticides or other changes to agriculture?
One of the things that was brought up in the Scientific American issue was this link between obesity and addiction. What's going on there?
Yeah, you know, food is obviously a deeply gratifying thing for us all to eat. And a lot of times people who have had trouble controlling their diets have sometimes felt sort of desperately saying like, oh, I feel like I'm addicted to food. What's been interesting in some of the more recent neurological studies has been the discovery that in fact, when we do eat, that a lot of times people are actually activating some of the same areas of their brain that are also activated by things like different sorts of addictive drugs. Food basically ties into a lot of these same kinds of reward pathways that are there for other kinds of recognized addictive substances. So it's really not just a metaphor to say that people can be addicted to food. At a certain level, it can be quite true. Now that we start to realize the ways in which that's the case, that may give us some sorts of tools down the line for finding better ways to help people control their diets or at least develop a better understanding of the kinds of compulsions that they experience.
We were talking, in a sense, about food security, of ensuring that people get enough to eat. But in another sense, food security could describe just how safe is our food.
One of the major, most striking attributes of our food supply these days is that it's tremendously industrialized. Most of us, if we're not just picking the strawberries off of plants in our backyard and eating them, are eating foods that are going through a complicated system where they can be being grown in one place, shipped to other places, moved on, going through different sorts of packaging and processing all along the way. As a result of that, that introduces, in some ways, it gives you good opportunities to be able to improve some of the food security at a certain level, but it also creates a lot of new opportunities for problems to pop up. For example, contamination of, let's say, from bacteria or, heaven forbid, some sort of terrorist activity striking at certain key points in this distribution and processing chain could do a lot to contaminate lots of foods down the line. This has been a kind of under-examined security issue for quite some time, although now more and more people are starting to pay attention to it. There are a lot of interesting ways in which the technology can start to move in on this and try to help with this problem. Some of the ideas that are being batted around, for example, are ways of using different sorts of radio frequency ID tags that could be attached to packets of food so that they could be tracked all the way through the supply chain so that we'd know, for example, where a particular piece of food had actually been, how it had been shipped, what it might have been exposed to. There are interesting ideas about new types of packaging, for example, that might be able to detect the presence of bacteria. So let's say, for example, that maybe you're buying a package of hamburger at the supermarket. Maybe the plastic that's covering that has a little chemically sensitive strip inside the plastic, which if it detected the presence of, say, dangerous E. coli that were there in the hamburger, maybe it would change color and alert you to the fact that you should not buy that package of food. There are even some levels of things that people are looking at that could start to show up in our kitchens. Fun ideas like new types of lights that could be installed above kitchen counters and at night while we're asleep. These things might be able to sort of pulse ultraviolet and kill different sorts of germs that would be on surfaces, or new types of advanced microwave ovens that would try to make sure that foods were all being cooked through properly so that you wouldn't be getting exposed to things that were in those. So there are a lot of potential technological ways of addressing these problems too, which is good because, of course, a lot of it is the result of a technological industrial process.
That was John Rennie, editor-in-chief of Scientific American magazine, talking about their recent coverage of food and health. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.